Hello and welcome to listeners of today's new podcast, which will be the first in a series of podcasts where we'll be discussing key regulatory trends and hot topics, which both firms and solicitors need to be aware of. My name is Naomi Latham, and I'm an associate here at CM Murray, and I'm joined by our regulatory partner, Andrew Pavlovich. Together, we will head up this regular podcast and look to bring on special guests in the future. In today's podcast, we plan to discuss the SRA's continued focus on firm culture following its thematic review and guidance on workplace environments in February 2022. Now, I think it's fair to say that workplace culture has increasingly been on the SRA's radar in the recent years, particularly from what we have seen from higher profile cases involving solicitors covering up errors made due to workplace culture, which did not encourage open dialogue. It would appear that the SRA are now looking beyond the specific allegations of bullying or harassment, for example, and inspecting workplace culture on a much deeper level. So turning to our main topics for discussion, and as I understand, the SRA published their thematic review and guidance on workplace environments in February of last year. And whilst it sought to address the role that firm culture plays in regulatory misconduct, did it actually go further in suggesting the proper use of workplace policies and systems, for example?
Well, the SRA do make clear in the guidance that they do not prescribe working practices or procedures, particularly in relation to issues like working hours. You know, some firms have a long hours culture, and they're not saying that that's right or wrong. But what they are saying is that firms must have effective systems in place to ensure compliance with the code. And the thematic review identifies three main areas for firms to concentrate on. The first is in relation to mental health and firms being able to identify when staff may be struggling with mental health difficulties and provide appropriate support. I think there is a much greater emphasis on mental health these days, both in law firms and in society generally. And firms are getting to grips with this issue. I think a number of them will have mental health champions now who staff can speak to if they have concerns and who are there to raise awareness of mental health issues generally. And there's a greater understanding as well about sort of the constant pressure on lawyers and the need for lawyers to be able to have some downtime. And I know some firms have brought in some sort of internal rules about not having to check emails after a certain time. And it's quite common now to see the do not read until tomorrow on emails, and just people being a bit more sympathetic and thoughtful really about the pressure that they put on juniors, because if you know mental health does become an issue, they're potentially more likely to make mistakes, and alongside that, there's a risk they might then do something dishonest to try and cover up that mistake. And so that then leads on to the sort of the next area of focus, which is creating a speak up culture where individuals can admit if they've made a mistake or if they're having a mental health issue or if they've been the victim of harassment or discrimination. And particularly around mistakes, we've seen a number of cases, as you've mentioned at the outset there, where juniors have been struck off the roll for dishonestly concealing a mistake. Quite often that goes back to firm culture, and they've said that, you know, if they felt they were too scared to admit that they'd made a mistake because they would be dressed down or they would be personally criticised or blamed. So one thing that the thematic review suggests that firms do is to sort of discuss mistakes holistically. So when a mistake does happen, think, okay, why did that happen? What can we do to stop it from happening again? So it's not just seen as an individual error. And also encouraging partners to share examples of mistakes that they've made and how those mistakes were resolved. And because quite often I think there's a feeling if when you are a junior that a mistake is the end of the world, and quite often that's not the case. Most mistakes can actually be resolved fairly straightforwardly. And even if it is a mistake that results in a negligence claim being made against the firm, then clearly that's preferable than to doing something dishonest to try and cover it up. And then just the third one is about supervision. So the code of conduct for firms says that firms must have a system in place for supervising client matters. But this guidance makes clear that supervision goes beyond supervising client matters. It's about checking up on your staff, checking in to identify whether they've had suffering from any issues, for example, mental health problems, and also ensuring that their continuing competence is up to date, that they're keeping up to date with relevant developments, and that you're helping them progress their careers. So this is all around preventing mistakes, preventing clients suffer adverse outcomes, and also preventing sort of unhealthy cultures in firms, which lead to sort of regulatory misconduct more generally.
Thanks, Andrew. And I've definitely seen the out of office or signature responses you mentioned with other firms. And it says, I think, both for internal and external purposes, I don't propose to answer within or respond to your email, within X to Y hours. And I equally don't expect you to respond to any of my emails outside of office hours. So yeah, I definitely think it's something that we'll see more of. So then do you think we will see this focus on firm culture continue into this year, 2023?
Yes, I do, particularly with the introduction of a new rule in the code of conduct for individuals and firms. So this new rule requires firms and individuals to treat colleagues fairly and not unfairly discriminate against them. And it also requires managers to challenge behaviour that does not meet this standard. So what that's aimed at is unfair treatment, which leads to the sort of things that we've just been talking about, but also unfair treatment that is not picked up on or not effectively challenged. So an example might be a junior or a trainee or whoever it is makes a mistake and a partner gives them a dressing down in an open plan office in front of everyone, and other partners are there and they don't step in, they don't challenge behaviour, they don't do anything about it. And you end up then in an atmosphere where people are scared to admit mistakes and something goes wrong. So it's about managers, which is partners or for these purposes, taking responsibility to set the standard and challenge behaviour that doesn't meet those standards. And you can tell how seriously the SRA are treating this issue because they've recently published a joint statement with the Solicitors Disciplinary Tribunal following the increase in the SRA's internal fining powers from £2,000 to £25,000. And what this statement does is it sets out the categories of cases which the SRA proposes to deal with in accordance with its own powers, i.e. up to fines of £25,000, in cases which it would refer to the tribunal, where a fine of £25,000 wouldn't be a sufficient sanction. And interestingly, the statement states that the SRA expects to refer cases to the tribunal where there's been a failure by a law firm to take appropriate steps to protect an employee from counter-inclusive misconduct or to ensure a safe working environment. So if we do end up in one of these cases that we've seen before and the SRA finds that, yes, the firm's culture did contribute to the misconduct, it seems that the case would be referred to the Solicitors Disciplinary Tribunal and the firm could be facing a fine in excess of £25,000.
Wow, that is a jump of a fine. And as I understand, the SRA have now sent proposed rule change to the Legal Services Board for approval, together with the draft guidance. So what does this say about how unfair or discriminatory behaviour should be challenged in the workplace?
Yeah, so as you say, the LSB is currently considering the proposed change and they've got until the end of April to do so. So the draft guidance is helpful in that it makes clear that unfair conduct for regulatory purposes is not the same as unfair conduct for the purposes of an employment tribunal claim. Because I think there was a concern that this requirement to challenge unfair behaviour or the requirement to treat colleagues fairly could result in the SRA becoming a quasi-employment tribunal. And the SRA have made clear that in this guidance, they wouldn't expect to get involved in disputes about pay rises or work allocation. When they talk about unfair conduct, what they're focused on is conduct which creates an environment which is more likely to lead to mistakes or poor outcomes for clients. And they give an example of a firm putting pressure on staff to cover up problems. And then obviously that leading perhaps potentially to a failure to admit or even a dishonest act to conceal a mistake on a client file. So in terms of how managers should effectively challenge behaviour, there has been a bit of discussion about what that means in practice. You know, does that mean challenging someone in the moment if they're talking rudely or dismissively to someone. And, you know, could that potentially make things worse if, you know, you end up having a sort of shouting match in the middle of an open plan office? The guidance again states that the SRA is not going to prescribe how managers should challenge behaviour. So we don't have an exact sort of this is what you must do. But there are some helpful statements, indicators in the guidance. Firstly, they state that the action does not need to be formal, but it must be effective. What I think they're getting at there is if potentially there's an issue about whether someone's spoken to someone in an aggressive way or rude way, but it's not necessarily that serious, it might be reasonable in the first instance to pull someone aside and say that they don't think that behaviour was acceptable. And if that results in the behaviour stopping, then that's fine. But if that doesn't, then I think the SRA would expect you to take it further and initiate some kind of formal action. And then secondly, the guidance states that where it is feasible for a manager that witnesses unfair treatment to intervene immediately to stop it, the SRA will expect them to do so. And obviously that leads to the obvious question of when will it be feasible to intervene immediately? I think that will remain a judgment call as to whether it is safe to intervene. You know, one of the potential ways in which this rule could play out is if people are in an outside work context at a work function and alcohol might have been involved. So I think there are real questions about when is it safe to intervene? How can unfair behaviour be effectively challenged? And the SRA's guidance doesn't tell you exactly what to do, but it's clear that you have to do something, and you can't just let these things slide. And if you do let them slide and it develops into something more serious, then you know potentially the firm and the managers could face SRA action.
No, that's really interesting. It definitely sounds it's going to be open to debate as to when is the right time to intervene. In any of those situations.
Yeah, exactly. And some people will have differing views as well about, you know, how robust conversation should be and how robust feedback should be.
And it all comes down to, well, it doesn't all come down to, but partly down to perception and how things are received.
Yeah, I think there is some scope for difficulty there. I mean, it's certainly, I think, laudable, and I think it's sort of good that they're trying to address it, but I think you could have a situation where, you know, one manager thinks that another manager has overstepped the mark. Perhaps, you know, there's a disagreement there. People are unsure whether or not they need to challenge behaviour. I think there is definitely some scope for it to cause some complexity. But I guess we'll have to see how it all plays out in time.
Definitely. So then turning to junior solicitors, and I know from reading some high profile cases that have scared me nonetheless, that there have been a number of junior solicitors being struck off for acting dishonestly. And I suppose it comes back to the point you raised earlier about when you are junior, and I know it myself, any mistake you do make, you think it's catastrophic and career ending. But do you think this is something that the SRA's guidance and thematic review has taken into account?
Yeah, I think that was one of the main drivers behind the thematic review, actually, because the SRA was criticised quite heavily for its conduct in some of those cases, because the junior solicitors that were struck off were saying, I was working extreme number of hours a day, I had lots of client files, I wasn't being properly supervised, etc., etc. And you know, the SRA didn't take any action against the firm, so I should say denied those accusations. But a lot of criticism came from, particularly from the Junior Lawyers Division and other organisations representing junior lawyers, saying effectively you're treating the symptom of the problem, but you're not dealing with the cause of the problem, which is actually the culture within these firms. So I think that was a driver behind this guidance. And again, this obligation to challenge behaviour is probably trying to drive at the same thing as well, you know, making sure that people are treated fairly and they're not going to be subject to unfair treatment if they make a mistake or do something which would make them more likely to try and hide something in the future. And another indicator, I think, that the SRA are thinking about junior solicitors is this rule change itself, because initially it was going to require all solicitors to challenge unfair or discriminatory behaviour. And when the SRA consulted on this rule change, there was quite a lot of feedback saying that this would be an unfair imposition on junior solicitors, because obviously it's harder for someone junior to challenge something compared to someone who's more senior. And if someone or junior was witnessing a partner, for example, shouting at their colleague, and not only would that make them feel uncomfortable, they'd then have to be wrestling with this idea of, well, do I have to challenge this behaviour? And if I don't challenge it, would I be in breach of this rule? So the feedback was that, you know, junior solicitors should be exempted from this requirement to challenge behaviour. And to be fair to the SRA, they took on board that feedback. And that's how when they decided that the obligation to challenge behaviour should only fall on managers.
Thanks, Andrew. It's good to actually see that they've taken something on board in looking at it in the round, at least. So then looking at the year ahead, is it fair to say that the SRA will be looking at both individuals and firms when it comes to investigating complaints of discrimination or bullying, for example?
Yes, I think so. I think in general, when instances of individual misconduct are being reported to the SRA now under the self-reporting system, firms are thinking a lot more carefully about their own role. You know, it's not just a question of person X has done this, it's person X has done this, and, you know, did our culture in any way contribute to that? So a recent Culp and Coffer conference, the SRA confirmed that they are currently investigating around 40 cases of bullying, discrimination and harassment within law firms. And whilst the subject of that investigation may be an individual that's been accused of the bullying behaviour or the discriminatory behaviour or the harassing behaviour, I think as part of the SRA investigation, they will be saying to the firms, well, what policies do you have around anti-harassment or anti-discrimination? What training have you provided, et cetera, et cetera. So I think when firms report individual misconduct, they will need to be thinking quite carefully about, okay, well, this person's done this, but why have they done it? Have we not given them enough training? Do they not know what our policies are, et cetera? And I think that is another positive driver for change, because although it has a sort of a, it's definitely the stick rather than the carrot in terms of, you know, you're potentially doing something to prevent being the subject of regulatory action. To be able to say when someone does do something wrong that actually we've given them the training, they know what the policies are, is a useful self-defense mechanism for firms. So I think it's a combination of firms needing to do this anyway, because there are obvious reasons why you wouldn't want to have an atmosphere like that in your law firm. You're not going to, and people aren't going to work effectively if there's bullying or discrimination, harassment, unfair treatment going on. But there's also this idea of we need to show that not just that we have policies, but that we have training on them, and that we're in a position where if any of these complaints do come up, that we can show that it wasn't as a result of a bad culture.
So it sounds as though the SRA guidance has played a vital and arguably overdue role in shifting expectations and shining the spotlight on firms when misconduct does occur. And so thank you, everyone, for listening and joining us on the podcast today. If you do have any questions on what we spoke about or would like to get involved in our now regular podcast, do feel free to get in contact with Andrew or myself. And please tune in for next month. We will be discussing the increased scrutiny on lawyers following the 1-year anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine.